Mishlei and Modern Psychology as part of the Beit Midrash for tonight. Sponsored by Sydney and... is this the right, one? Yes. Sydney and Shoshana Katz, in loving memory of her grandmother, Shoshana's grandmother, Annie Kleiman. Here's Hashem, her neshama, Shehaven Aliyah. Okay. We have, perhaps, as I mentioned, sort of as an introduction last week, perhaps one of the most famous phrases in Mishlei tonight. And I will tell you that I knew this phrase growing up. It's not like, you know, I didn't know it, but people are familiar with my love for self-help books. That does not, by the way, mean that I take them all at face value. You have to still filter out when you read these kinds of books, especially with statistics and how things change. But the first book I ever introduced to the shul in part of my speeches, I believe, was Friday night, December 13th, around then, when I came to a tryout in 2018. Does that make sense? I think so. Because I got here in 2019, I think. Yeah. Thank you. But my first time that I quoted was at Rabbi Aaron Lieb's house. I just saw at the Farber graduation. And I quoted from a book called Grit. The book called Grit by Angela Duckworth. A wonderful book. Wonderful not because, again, not because everything she says is right, but because it really grapples with some fascinating sort of reframing of how we look at the world and how we look at our own possibilities, our own capabilities. And in that book, she talks about how she doesn't get tattoos. I remember it pretty clearly, I'm pretty sure. I haven't seen this book I have it in my house, but I haven't listened to it or read this part of the book in probably 5-6 years. But I believe, if I remember correctly, she says that she's not one to get tattoos. But if she would get tattoos, there's one phrase she would get, which is based on what she calls an old Chinese proverb. And the quote that she says she would get a tattoo of is, fall 7, get up 8. Fall 7, get up 8. And the second she said that, I said, proverb, yes. Chinese, no. That is a proverb from Shlomo HaMelech, and we're about to read it ourselves. This is chapter 24. Verse 16, Chav Dalet Hesvav, Shlomo says exactly those words, Ki Sheva Yipol Tzadik Vakam. This is connected to last week's pasuk at the end of Hesvav, but we can say it just independently. Ki Sheva Yipol Tzadik Vakam, that because a righteous person will fall 7 times and then get up. And Angela Duckworth goes on to say, most people understand this proverb to mean that no matter how many times you fail, you have to get back up. And that's what she talks about the book. The book is about resilience. The book is about grit, right? It's actually heavily based on the distinction that Carol Dweck makes in Mindset, even though I only read that book 3-4 years later. When I listened to it, not read it, when I listened to it, I'm like, this sounds a lot like grit. And lo and behold, you know, when I look back at grit, a lot of it is based on, she actually quotes Angela Duckworth in Mindset, but Angela Duckworth hadn't written Grit yet, so they were already acquainted with each other. Either way, so she talks about the importance of grit, of resilience. When something difficult happens, how do you deal with it? And you're right, I've talked about this recently, sort of the locus of control that we all have. Who's in control? Is it our environment that's controlling us, or are we controlling our environment, or reacting and taking, sort of embracing it and taking it for our own? So Sheva Yipol Tzadik Vakam, she says most people understand it to mean that a person, no matter how many times you fall down, has still got to get up. That's obviously the conventional understanding of this phrase, of this proverb, if you will. But then Angela Duckworth takes it a step further. She takes it a step further and says, it's not. The message of that proverb is not to say that no matter how many times you fall down, you should still get up. But rather, that in order to really get up, in order to really achieve, you have to be willing to fall down. And while she says this, Joshua, and I'm listening to it, you know, in my 99 Camry, driving down Antioch Road in Overland Park, Kansas, I'm saying to myself, also not her own idea. That was brought into the world by Rav Yitzchak Huttner. Now maybe somebody else said it before Rav Yitzchak Huttner. But Rav Yitzchak Huttner was famous for this line. It was a letter, I believe, if I remember correctly. Not famous enough for me to remember the context of it. But if I remember, the context was a yeshiva guy who spoke to Rav Yitzchak Huttner was 20th century, I think, rabbi in one of the yeshivas in New York. I can't remember right now. Escaping me. Tor Vadas, maybe? I don't remember. I might be getting this completely mixing up with someone else. But Rav Yitzchak Huttner was also famous for being one of the hostages in the 71, was it? That airplane, Uganda, I think it was. I don't know what I'm talking about. Anyways, so Rav Yitzchak Huttner sent a letter back to yeshiva guy who was very distraught. He felt like he wasn't succeeding in his learning. He wasn't able to to stay strong in his Yiddishkeit. And I don't remember the whole context as I said before, but Rav Huttner responds back to him with this pasuk: Sheva Yipol Tzadik V'Kam. People misunderstand this pasuk. He says it doesn't simply mean that when a person falls down, he's got to get back up. You got to be resilient, get back up. It's also the fact that the falling down itself is part of the growth. And a lot of people think that in order to be successful, you have to be standing. And it's not true. In order to be successful, you have to be willing to fall. You have to be willing to fall. We've talked about this in the pasuk in Vayikra. The pasuk goes through different karbanos everyone brings. And it says different leaders have to bring, right? In Kohen HaMashiach Echata, Lashmas Ha'am, he has to bring this karban. And if a different leader sins, he's got to bring that karban. And when it comes to the Nasi, when it comes to the sort of the, I guess, more secular leader of the Jewish people, it doesn't say if he sins, it says when he sins. Asher Nasi Echata. And as the Nesiv goes through, he explains that when you become a person of leadership, when you go into an authoritative role, sometimes you think you've got to be perfect. In order to be a good leader, you have to be perfect, always standing up straight. So no, Asher Nasiyach HaTzah, sometimes, the Nesiv doesn't say this, I think this might be my own creative interpretation of the Nesiv, but in order to lead, you have to be willing to fail. In order to lead, you have to know it's going to not work out sometimes. And it's only once you realize that, it's only once you've embraced that and understood things are going to go wrong and I'm okay with that, then you can take the necessary risks in order to be successful. And it's a beautiful drush on the pasuk. I don't remember seeing the letter inside, but Rav Yitzchak Huttner, his idea, and then later on co-opted by Angela Duckworth in her book Grit. So it's a beautiful drush. Just looking at the words of the pasuk, Kisheva Yipol Tzadik V'Kam. Now, what makes a person a tzadik? According to the conventional understanding we said before, that it's all about whether you can be resilient and stand up after falling down. So the order of the pasuk seems to be wrong. It shouldn't be Sheva Yipol Tzadik V'Kam. It should be Sheva Yipol V'Kam Tzadik. Someone who falls down 7, gets up 8. So that's a tzadik. That's not what the pasuk says. The pasuk says Sheva Yipol Tzadik. Fall down 7 and you're a tzadik. And then V'Kam. If you're a person that's willing to fall down 7 times, we know you're going to get up the 8th time. It's the people that aren't willing to fall down 7 times that won't get up on the 8th time because they already fell down on the 3rd time and they gave up. They already fell down on the 2nd time and said, I don't want to do this anymore. I can't do it. I'm not willing to fail anymore. And then they give their fear of failure means they'll never even get to the 8th time. And I was just listening to Rav Moshe Weinberger, an old recording of Moshe Weinberger on this pasuk, where he talks about how the number 8 is only the number 8 because there are 7 times before it. And while we think, what does success mean when I can finally stand up? It's not true. The 8th time is only a success because it includes the 7. Right? If it was only successful when you're fully standing and you're not falling down anymore, so then it would be Sheva Yipol Tzadik, and then at some other time, become independently, one time he got up. But it's not one time, it's the eighth time he got up. The eighth time he got up because he was willing to fall all those seven times. And it's the willingness to fail that is what creates our resilience, not the fact that we stood up afterwards. The fact that we're willing to fail. There's a quote that I've always thought was attributed to Michael Jordan, who I'm not really a fan of generally, but he actually has a couple interesting ideas. And one of them that I've heard was that he said people used to say to him that that they're always impressed that he can make the last shot. He's, game on the line, last second of the fourth quarter, give it to Michael Jordan and he'll miss it. And he'll make it. And the truth is that Michael Jordan said, I don't know if he actually said this, I heard this quoted about him, that he said that the truth is that what makes me so good is not that I make the last shot, because most of the time I actually miss the last shot. You know, basketball players, difficult to make, especially high pressure. The defense is even harder. Everyone knows Michael Jordan takes. So he probably shoots 40, 45% on the last shot of the game. So that's good, but it's not like unbelievable. So what separates Michael Jordan is not the fact that he makes the last shot, is that he's willing to miss the last shot. Everyone wants to make the last shot. Every kid in their driveway pretends that in the championship game, in the last second, you win the game by hitting the last shot. No kid pretends like they missed the last shot. And that's what a successful person is. A successful person is not the person that's hoping to make it. It's the person that's willing to miss it. And that's what such a beautiful order that Shlomo HaMelech puts it in. Kisheva Yipol, when you fall down, when you're willing to fall down seven times, then you're a tzaddik. Then you're a righteous person. And sometimes we feel like, didn't get the chakras today. Oh, I didn't get to this year today. I didn't understand the drasha today. I wasn't nice enough to my kids today. I wasn't nice enough to my colleague at work today. Ay, nebuch. What am I going to do? I'm a failure. So it's the next day that's most important. The next day when you get to that same kid, the same, your same child, the same colleague, the same, shir, the same davening. Do you say to yourself, I failed yesterday, so why do I even try today? Or do you say to yourself, okay, I failed yesterday, and that's okay. If I fail again today, that'll be okay too. I just have to keep trying and making sure that I do my best. So that's the pasuk of Shlomo HaMelech. Kisheva Yipol Tzadik. If you're willing to fall down, then you're a tzadik. Now, you can't be complacent, and you can't pretend like everything's good. You still have to have some remorse. But you have to be willing. You have to be willing to fail in order to ultimately succeed. That's the come afterwards. The tzaddik who falls down seven times will ultimately rise because he won't end until he's successful.
Hey, Rabbi.
Yeah.
There also a saying like the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over. Oh. So you have to try. But obviously, if you're doing it wrong, you got to try to.
Of course. This is about trying, not doing the same thing every time.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
If you miss Minyan because you snooze it seven times, don't snooze seven times tomorrow. Yeah. No, you can't do the same thing. You still have to try, though. You still have to try and say, okay, I failed. Failure is bad, but it's not insurmountable. And that's really the name of the game. And I think, by the way, another aspect to this in terms of sort of the American critique is that sometimes we feel that failure is only justified when it ends up in success, right? It's only, I have to fail, that's true too, that you have to fail in order to succeed. But if I were to tell somebody, I don't know if you're going to succeed, so then they'd give up because it's only, right, the ends justify the means in America. If you're not going to succeed, so why do you keep trying? But I think it's not really about the fact that you'll succeed. It's about the fact that you're willing to try, which is most important, and appreciating the process and appreciating, just the opportunity to succeed is what's important to take note from this pasuk. However, Rishayim, when it comes to a wicked person, yikashlu bera'ah. Yikashlu bera'ah is such an interesting phrase. Yikashlu means to fail. Bera'ah means in evil, in their wickedness. What does it say here? But the wicked ones will stumble into misfortune. Is there a stumbling into fortune? Is there, yikashel literally means to fail. Yikashel means to fail. So what does it mean that yikashlu bira'ah? They fail in their wickedness. So you could say that maybe you could fail out of happenstance, out of non-wickedness. But I think what it means also, if we're going to sort of see the flip side of this same idea, is that their failure is their wickedness, because when they fail, their perspective is, I'm not doing it anymore. Right? There are two types of failure. I just quoted on Shabbos, the Gemara in Gittin. Where is that Gemara? I think Mem Gimel, maybe, where it says that, based on the pasuk in Yeshayahu, that the Torah, Ein Adam, what was the pasuk? I'm mixing up the words, but it's something like, Ein Torah tachas yidei Adam, ela im kein yikashlu ba, or something like that. A drasha from the pasuk in Shaila basically means that a person doesn't really hold the Torah, isn't able to embrace and feel autonomy, control over Torah, until they've already failed at it. Which is a fascinating pasuk. At least fascinating Gemara. The pasuk doesn't sound like that. But the Gemara says that if you really want to take hold of Torah in a real personal and serious way, so that you have to not just be willing to fail, you have to fail. You have to fail in order for it to take hold. Because if you don't fail, you'll never really know what the thing means. Right? Well, let's say you're talking about, you're talking about davening properly. Okay, so you daven. I'll give you a personal example. When I was a rabbinic intern in Riverdale, we had a 600-member congregation. Mirat Hashem, one day we'll get there. We're working on it. But 600-member congregation, because of that, we had a whole team of rabbis. It was the senior rabbi, then the assistant rabbi, and I believe there were two or three rabbinic interns. And we had four minyanim on Shabbos, and we would rotate between all of them. We all got to speak at every one. And because it was sort of a crowded, job, only one person wasn't giving a sermon every Shabbos, right? Four minions, but five rabbis. And oftentimes one would be off, on vacation or something. So you don't always, everyone's got it. So you can never speak, you can never go and listen to another one of your rabbinic colleagues' sermons. On one occasion, the senior rabbi was able to make it to my sermon, right? Which is a little more pressure than usual. And I think it only happened like three times. But the first time I spoke, he had a lot of criticisms for me, which was good. And then the last time I spoke, it had been a while since he had heard me. And he said something along the lines of, Shai, I think you found your voice, which was like a very, proud moment for me. But there was one time where he came to a drasha of mine, and it was good. I think it was good. Maybe one of the drushas was mostly good, and there was something wrong with it, or one thing that he wanted to critique. And he said to me, I remember I was giving him a ride to YU at the time, and he said to me, I'd much rather you give a bad drusha. Much rather give a bad, what do you mean? I'm supposed to be working for your congregation. You want me to give a bad drusha? He said, if you don't give a bad drusha, how are you ever going to grow? If you gave a good drusha, what that means is you're not taking enough risks to grow, right? Imagine, for instance, someone's at the gym and they're lifting 3-pound weights. So, okay, good, you made it to the gym. Good, you're lifting weights. But you're not going to grow at all. If there's no pain or strain, if there's no tension in the muscle, so then you won't grow any muscle, right? So in order to actually grow, what's his name? Friedman. Decoding greatness. I'm Ron Friedman, maybe. He talks about how he talks about comedians. Now, people might be familiar with comedians, maybe they're not. But comedians, the way that they grow is they go to these small clubs. Before they, put on these shows and they sell out arenas and things like that, they go to these small little clubs. and they try out jokes that they know for sure are going to be terrible. But they need to try them out to push themselves. And it talks, they go through the chapter where he talks about that they're committed to failure. Like they want to do poorly so that they can test their limits. If you don't test your limits, if you're not going to pick up the barbell, which is too hard to carry, so then you'll never know how you can grow. And this is my rabbinic mentor was telling me, like, I want you to have a bad drasha so that you can learn from it. If you're going to give a good drasha, how are you ever going to grow? So the same thing here, sheva yipol tzadik b'kam doesn't just mean you're willing to fail. It's that you're committed to failure. Because if you don't have the yipol, you will not have the kam. Meaning, what was better? I spoke about this also recently. When I spoke about this? What's better? Sheva yipol tzadik b'kam or tzadik b'kam? Is it better to fall down 7 times and get up the 8th time? Or is it better to have never fallen down in the first place? The answer is obviously fall down 7 and get up 8. Because it's only through the falling down 7 that you actually become a better person. They actually grow as a good person. If you're a safe person and you never take risks, as my father's, little framed artwork on the shelf once said, you can't get to second base if your foot's on first. Right? You have to be able to take a risk. And sometimes that means you're going to get thrown out before you get to second base. But at least you tried. The next time you have to get to second base, you'll know how to get there better. But if you never get off first base, if you're only tzaddik b'kam, so then you're not much of a tzaddik at all. In order to grow, we have to not just be willing to fail, but committed to fail, to push your limits and to see where you can get better by failing and seeing where you can get better. And Rishayim, yikash lubira, when they do something bad, that's when they fail, because they're not willing to push the envelope. After that, Shlomo Malka tells us a very interesting, maybe a counterintuitive lesson also, with those who fail. So we hope that we're the tzaddikim, we hope that we can live up to that sort of high standard of not just being willing to fail, but committed to fail. But let's say somebody else is not like that. That somebody else is going to give up. Somebody else doesn't have the same level of commitment to failure. So says Shlomo Melech, don't rejoice in their wickedness and thereby their consequence of their wickedness. A famous pasuk also, not as famous as the one we just said, but bin pol, bin full, oyvecha, or oyivcha, al tismach. When your enemy fails, when your enemy falls, do not rejoice. When your enemy falls, do not rejoice. So there are a lot of different explanations of this pasuk. A lot of different ways we can look at this pasuk. The most famous example application of this pasuk is in Yetzias Mitzrayim, right? When I don't know if Rashi says it or maybe I'm just familiar with the Gemara, but when the Jewish people go through Kriyas Yamsuf, and in Shemayim they're rejoicing over the fact that the Jewish people are successfully on the other side of the water. So Hashem says, why are you celebrating? Right? Ma'ase yadai, tavu b'yam v'atem amrim shira. My creations are at the bottom of the ocean, and you're celebrating? That's what Hashem says, b'nfol oivech al tismach. When the enemy is destroyed, don't be happy about that. We shouldn't be happy when a bad person dies. We should be upset that they never became a better person. Because that's a wasted life. That's a wasted life. That person never had a chance to be a better person. Now, that doesn't mean we can't, adjudicate the proper consequences for a person. That doesn't mean you have to be nice to bad people. What it does mean is that when, unfortunately, they meet their demise, which they oftentimes should, it's a nebuch situation. It's not a rejoicing situation. And there's a lot of discussion when a terrorist is killed by the IDF. I remember this was a big deal. I think it was when bin Laden was killed. Should we rejoice? Should we rejoice that Osama bin Laden was killed? Should we rejoice that Adolf Hitler, Yimach Shemo, committed suicide? Should we rejoice? Allegedly. No, he didn't. Should we rejoice about that? So it's a very hard question, because our instinct is, yeah, we should be happy. Of course we should be happy. So I'll tell you... The question is not should you be happy. The question is, what should you be happy about? What should you be happy about? And I think this sort of changes the narrative a little bit. Because while Shalom Achdas said, Bin Pol Ayivcha Al Tisma, when your enemy fails, you should not be happy. What he means is, what you could say he means, and there are other interpretations, what he could mean is, do not be happy about their falling. Be happy that you don't have an enemy anymore. Be happy over the fact that Osama bin Laden is not going to threaten the Jews anymore. We're not going to die at his hands anymore. We're rejoicing over the fact that we are now safer than we were yesterday. We're happy that we have less to worry about. Thank you, Hashem, for protecting us. But in terms of Osama bin Laden, wish he could have been a better person. It's a very different framing. While we all have the instinct to hate people that hate us. So, in some ways we have to step beyond sort of our own sort of, personal myopic view of the situation and see it in more of the context of the world. That this was not, what this person did was not the intention Hashem had when he created him. Right? When Hashem created that person, he had bigger plans for him. He had bigger plans for her. He had great, hopes that they would fulfill their potential and be positive contributors to the world. And look at this guy. He did not fulfill his potential. And that's a sad thing. That's not something we should rejoice over. That's something sad. Again, we should rejoice over what the benefit that Hashem granted us in that person's, demise. But in the same sense, we should not be overly happy about it. Let me just see if there's any other commentary that maybe I missed within this pasuk. I'm not even seeing any commentary on this pasuk. Doesn't have it here? Oh, it's on the next page. I don't know why that is. Right, as we said, it's a follow-up to the pasuk beforehand. A person who is an enemy of an enemy, a person who sort of gives back what they're getting from the enemy, is not really rejoicing over the fact that a wicked person was gone, they're rejoicing over the fact that their enemy is gone. Very interesting phrase. Once you connect to the previous pasuk, it actually makes a lot more sense according to how Rabbeinu Yonah is saying it. This person was a bad person. Osama bin Laden was a bad person because he was a bad person. Not because he killed us. That's bad too. But you can rejoice over the fact that evil was destroyed from the world, that evil is gone from the world. But in terms of rejoicing over your enemy dying, so that's a personal thing. You shouldn't make things so personal. Okay. Ubi kashlo al yageli becha. And when they stumble, your heart should not rejoice. It's kind of an interesting phrase. Your heart should not rejoice. It sounds almost like it's more of an emotional question. Even if you're not going to do it outwardly, that would have maybe, negative social, repercussions. So even internally, it would be bad for you to do that, and not kind. Why? Why is it that you shouldn't? So pen yireh Hashem barabe enav, lest Hashem see what you're doing, that you are rejoicing, and even if it's internal, Hashem will see that. Veheshiv me'alav apo, and he will redirect his anger, which is such a fascinating consequence. Somebody bad died. Let's assume for a second. Somebody bad died. We're rejoicing over their death. And Hashem, just like you said to the angels, you're rejoicing over one of my creation's demise. This is someone I had high hopes for, this person. Now you're glad that he couldn't fulfill what I wanted him to fulfill? So what does that say about Hashem? What does that say about the world that Hashem created? What we're glad for is that Hashem's will wasn't fulfilled. That's what we're celebrating. We're celebrating not just the demise of that person, but the failure of Hashem's world. And in that way, if we're celebrating about that person's demise, so then Hashem will gain retribution, will exact retribution upon us. Because we are then also sort of negating the fulfillment of the purpose of the world. That's a hard way to say it, obviously easier said than done. When Osama bin Laden dies, the first reaction is, oh, Baruch Hashem. But at the same time, we have to realize that Hashem's will was not fulfilled. Hashem brought him on the world, as we said before, to do something. And if we rejoice over the fact that he's gone and hasn't fulfilled Hashem's will, so then we are in some ways rejoicing over the fact that Hashem's will wasn't done. And that we don't want. That we don't want. So it's very, it's not that you can't celebrate. You have to be very careful about what you're celebrating. And that's what it's saying here, that if you are going to celebrate the downfall of your enemy, so you are effectively sort of asking for Hashem to sort of, to punish you also because you're acting against his will.
Excuse me, Rabbi?
Yeah, Joseph.
Why should we celebrate at all? I understand being relieved. I understand being grateful.
Right.
But what exactly is the celebration?
So the celebration would be, as I alluded to before, the celebration would be our own protection. Our own protection in terms of, so there are two things. First of all, our own protection, as I said before, which is that our lives were in danger, and the fact that our lives are no longer in danger allows us to now do the things we want to do with less threats. Now, obviously, us sitting in America, Osama bin Laden dying, we don't really correlate those two things together, but at least we can relate to other evils being gone, or we can relate to the people in Eretz Yisrael who are literally under attack from all of his directives. Now they can daven in shul as opposed to in a miklat, in a shelter, right? Now they can go out on the streets in the places that were being bombed instead of having to hide all the time. Right, so that's the kind of thing that we're rejoicing, number one. And number two, what we are rejoicing is, although it's true that this person has not fulfilled the will of Hashem, we are glad that he's also no longer working against the will of Hashem. That's how Rabbeinu Yonah was sort of saying it, that there was a wickedness in the world, which, while it was not fulfilling the will of Hashem, was working against the will of Hashem. And now we can celebrate the fact that there is no longer an antagonist to Hashem. Now, if we celebrate the person's life as being, we're glad that the person's life is gone, so that's what we said before, that's what you don't want to celebrate. But in terms of celebrating the fact that there's no longer somebody working against Hashem, so then that's, you can celebrate that ideal, not the person's death, but that ideal that there's no longer an antagonist Hashem. Again, you're not just celebrating the person's death. You're celebrating the lack of an antagonist, the lack of an enemy of Hashem. So that's how you would have to, again, it's a fine line and there's a subtlety there. But if you thread the needle properly, there's room to celebrate. And I remember reading articles about this online when Osama bin Laden died, about sort of rabbinic debates going back. My Rebbe, I remember Rav Yaakov Neuberger. This was, what was that? It must have been 2012, 2013, something like that, that bin Laden was killed, maybe 2011. And I remember the next day in Shir, I think it was, I don't know, the next day or somewhere around then, he talked about that exact question, like how should we respond as, Ovdei Hashem, how do we respond to bin Laden's death? That kind of thing. I might be getting, maybe he talked about it way after. But either way, let me look it up first, to see if I'm, how far off I am. Yeah, May 2nd, 2011. There you go. I'm not that old after all. Okay. But yeah, so it's a fine line, but if you have your mind in the right place, I think you can celebrate the right ideals, not necessarily the person's death. Okay, next pasuk, some loaded pasukim we just did. Obviously, we could spend a lot more time on them, but we got to move on. There's more wisdom to be said, regardless of whether it's famous, it's still valuable. Al tischar b'amreim, al tekaneh b'arsha'im. Al tischar is an interesting word. I'm not sure. Let me see if Rashi says tischar. I'm not sure what other example we have of this, but all the Mepharshim all say that what it means is to mix in with. Mesudas David says, Al tit arev im hamareim. Mureim here, the word mureim is so, the word mureim is so elusive. Because sometimes mureim means our friends, right? Reim ahuvim. So that could be a friend, but here it's referring to mireim, those who do evil, like the word ra. I don't know why linguistically there's such a strong connection between the two. But al tizkar b'mireim, al tekanei barishaim. This is so much easier said than done, especially in the world that we live in today. Do not hang out with evil people. Okay, that we get it. We've talked about that many a time. But al tekanei barishaim means do not be jealous or do not be envious of wicked people. Now, you and I say, why would I ever be envious of wicked people? So that depends on how we're going to define wickedness. There are plenty of wicked people in the world that are being, you know, coveted at all times. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean they're murderers, but they're still wicked. There are people in the world that are dedicated to sowing bad behavior in the world. And that's wicked. Now, they might not see it that way, right? How do you define wickedness is a very fascinating question. But the point is, we have to be very careful about who we put on a pedestal, who we praise, and if we're going to praise them in the proper way. So, for instance, in a similar sense to what we were just talking about, I'm not saying that celebrities are evil. I'm not saying that sports players are evil. But I do think that it's a worthwhile reminder, given this pasuk, even though they're not evil, most of them. So there are plenty of evil sports players and celebrities too. But my point is that when we praise them, right? We want to talk about Michael Jordan. We want to talk about, I grew up, I loved a couple of sports. Derek Jeter was like my, you know, baseball player that I modeled, you know, how I played after. And Randy Moss, really, he was not a good guy. I don't know if he is now or not. Now he's sort of like remodeled his image. People don't even know what I'm talking about. But, so how do we talk about those people? Do we say, I love Derek Jeter? You don't love Derek Jeter. Derek Jeter, for all everything it looks like, does not have my values. He does not believe in, you know, celibacy till marriage. He doesn't seem like he believes in having a family at all. You know, I don't know if he's religious at all from my impression. I think his family is religious, actually from Kalamazoo, Michigan. But should I be praising somebody? Why? Because he plays baseball? That I should love somebody because they play baseball? Baseball's wonderful. I love baseball. I love playing baseball, following baseball. But should that be what I love in life? Is some random guy that plays a sport? Right? How do we talk about celebrities? Taylor Swift. I don't even know if I can name a song of hers because I know what she looks like, so I try not to listen to her music. But like people talk about celebrity, you know, even Elon Musk. A lot of conservatives in the political space are really in favor of the things he's doing with Twitter or the things he does with SpaceX. You can marvel at everything that he does, but to say that I look up to Elon Musk, I don't know, he seems like an atheist to me. Should I look up to someone who doesn't believe in God? Instead, we could talk about, I love the rocket ship that he made. I love how he's managing Twitter. We don't love him. He's not a person, right? Al tekaneh barishaim means don't be covetous of the people, even if you maybe like the things that they have, the things that they do. Right, you can pick apart positives from people, even if generally they're not people you want to look up to. Here, it sounds almost like when it comes to a Russian, someone really bad, someone who's really wicked, you shouldn't even be jealous of the good things that they do. And that's a fine line. That's a hard thing to do. That's a real question about how to look at somebody who did something bad but did a lot of good in life. And those questions are really hard to answer. You know, people that I had this question, it was last year, 2 years ago, with the children's author, Chaim Waldman, that sort of heinous monster, right? Yeah, a lot of those books, people grew up on those books. You're going to throw those books out? Very hard to answer that question. Shlomo Carlebach, from all the reports, doesn't seem like he was the best person either. But all the songs that he made, you know, all the weddings that are enlivened because of all of his music, I'm not saying one way or the other. I have my own personal opinions about, you know, how connected are their successes with their criminality. But the point is, that's a very hard question. Here it doesn't sound like we're talking about that kind of person. Atik Nebar Hashem is someone who's literally, well, maybe we are. I don't want to say one way or the other. But don't covet really wicked people. You should not go grow too fondly of them. Why? For there will be no lasting outcome to evil. The lamp of the evil will be extinguished. In just pragmatic terms, oh, you think that guy's great? Don't you know he's going straight to Gehenna, right? Don't you know there's no real positive outcome for that person? Kilachris lara. You want to idolize Bernie Madoff? Don't you know that guy's, you know, responsible for the ruining of thousands of people's lives? Right? So if you don't know, that's one thing. But if you know the person's a bad guy, he does bad things, literally bad things. I'm not just talking about he's not Jewish. I'm saying he does really bad things. So you realize that's not a person you want to look up to because it's not actually going to work out for them. It might look right now like they've got it good. They've got a big house. They've got a nice car. They've got whatever. But in the end of the day, they're not going to have it so good. And that's what we have to remind ourselves of, is that, you know, just because it looks good now doesn't mean that it's necessarily that good. Okay, we're going to actually stop it here because I think the next part is a different idea. It's talking about who not to associate with, but it's not talking about evil people. And I want to sort of keep it that as an independent idea. So we'll stop it here and hopefully pick up next week. Yeah, next week I'm here. I'm going away tomorrow, so there's no Parsha Shir tomorrow. People know that or no?
Yeah.
Are people aware of that?
Everybody.
Okay, good. I know. I put it in the bulletin. Who?
Thank you.
Oh, June. Yeah, sorry, Marsha. I'm going to be Baruch Hashem. I'm not sorry that I'm doing this, but I'm going to a wedding of a cousin next tomorrow. You know my cousins, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to celebrate with them. Right at the zoo. So, Mirat Hashem, I'll be over there in Lakewood, Ira Kodesh. But hopefully I'll be back by Wednesday night. Hopefully I have a class. Okay, everyone should be well. Have a good night. Thank you again. Thank you. Thank you, Eugene. Thank you.
Rabbi, I'm still confused.
Yeah, what do you got, Joseph?